There's always a voice in our head, and we kind of hear it like a silent siren, and we don't pay attention to it for the longest time. And then all of a sudden, like a tipping point happens, and all of a sudden you recognize that you've been telling yourself whatever it may be, that you don't like this thing or that you should really be doing this. And it's kind of just interesting the moments in which that we finally start listening to it. And I think that that happens on the macro level that we're talking about, like career, but also on the micro level. It's something that I try and talk to with people on my sets is that there's something really interesting where if you're like, we're all looking at the monitor, getting ready for a shot, and how much you can hear in your head that something about the frame isn't right, but you don't say it out loud, and like that we all have to work harder at saying it out, like saying it, actually like recognizing that and saying it out loud. And that happens on a shot by shot basis in a film. And I think that it's the same skill that we need to apply on longer time scales about ourselves.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Variable Podcast. That opening excerpt was from our guest today, cinematographer Jared Levy, and this is your host, John Bragle. This week, Jared and I discuss the topic of pivoting towards more fulfilling work. I think a lot of times, because of Instagram and social media in general, we see people making career shifts, whether it's from documentary to branded content or from branded content to narrative shorts or commercials to features. And it's easy to just assume that these changes happened overnight because we're not really getting the full story and the full picture of what it was really like behind the scenes for these filmmakers and some of the intentional moves that they had to move around like chess pieces in order to make those dreams a reality. So it's been a great opportunity to dive in with Jared and learn a bit about his story and how he's created a way for himself to make the work that challenges him in a way that he wants to be challenged and to find fulfillment in the work as well. For those of you who are listening to this podcast for the first time, Variable is a community where filmmakers prioritize wellness and growth. So our podcast explores conversations with filmmakers that rest at the intersection of filmmaking and wellness. This particular podcast was pulled from a live conversation we had in the Variable community, where at the tail end of it, we just went on and on and on and entertained everyone's questions. And it was actually one of the most fulfilling events we've had in a long time. It sort of felt like group therapy in a way, because we were all just kind of talking out the things that block us and hold us back from doing the type of work that we really desire to do. So if you're interested in any of that type of conversation, we have events every week on, again, topics related to filmmaking and wellness. So you can check us out at wearevariable.com, and we'd love to have you. All right. And I will start the conversation now.
So I'm trying to think about this topic about fulfilling work, Jared. How did this topic initially come up? Do you remember?
We were talking. You called me. We were having a conversation that I can't remember what it was about. But then I think that there was a discussion about. We started talking about commercial industry, and then I think how some people were lamenting being in it, and then I think I made an off like a side comment like, well, then, you know, why are so many people in it if they don't want to be in it? Mm-hmm. And then we kind of got kicked off the tangent that became, I think, this conversation's, you know, starter. Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't we dive in?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I guess first and foremost, for people that don't know Jared, if you didn't check out his site, he's a cinematographer. And Jared, why don't you tell us a little bit about your kind of path from the type of work that you started doing and how you've managed to transition into more of the narrative and feature work you're doing today?
Yeah. Gosh, it's like I can answer that in 5 minutes or an hour. I started off going to journalism school. I didn't go to film school. And I thought that I was going to be a sports broadcaster. And I had a really big change of thought while in school, at this point, 15, 18 years ago, and realized how much I cared about world events and global issues. And I stayed within the journalism school. It's a great journalism school at Syracuse. And but I viewed what I wanted to do. I wanted to do documentary film, and at the time, I viewed it as long format journalism. But essentially, I was a documentarian, and I didn't view myself in any way, shape, or form as a filmmaker. I viewed that as a wholly different profession. And I viewed, especially at the school, like I wasn't in, there was a film program at Syracuse, and they were in a different college within the university. So there was a real, separation there, and that separation lived in my mind for a long time. And then after school, I graduated in 08 recession, and I bought a one-way ticket to Brazil, and I ended up living there for 2 years with the goal in mind of like figuring out what I wanted to work on, and like I was just going to work on my portfolio, whatever that meant. And I went down there with this whole understanding that I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker and make documentary work. And I ended up getting involved in the graffiti scene in São Paulo and was documenting that. And I made a lot of stuff about them, but then I made like this one big thing, and that ended up being a film that started going around the States in mid-tier film festivals, nothing crazy. And I used that as a way to kind of come back home. And I'm from New York, so coming home and going to New York was also coming home. So I didn't have to like choose between a hometown and a major media place, which was easier for me. And then I started to try and get into film work. And I got into the indie film scene in New York just based on who I ended up connecting with. And I realized that I was 25 years old, and I had made, a film, and I made a bunch of other stuff, but I still didn't know what a C-stand was or a floppy. And so that kind of, I took a step back and I decided to start ACing. And when I was ACing, realizing how much of the craft I didn't know at the time and was eager to learn everything. And that was what subjected me to other genres. And I remember the first time being on a narrative set as an AC. We were on it was, an indie film that didn't have a street lockdown or anything like that. And we were on a stoop in Tribeca and filming a couple talking, but like the street was active. And I remember when they yelled action, I thought to myself, like anything could happen right now. And I think the biggest realization for me was how much more real life it was than I thought it could be. And that really opened up my mind. And so that made me more open to other things besides documentary. And I worked my way back up from AC to DP, but now with a more technical understanding, having learned on set. And documentary kind of went into branded content very naturally, and that's where the money was, especially in like the height of Vimeo and around 2011, 2012. And that's kind of what I did for a long time, wanting to do like just trying to figure out for a long time just how to make a life out of this. And branded content was definitely the way that I found a way in, and a lot of that was because of my documentary background. And years went by before realizing that I should start shooting short films if I ever want to make anything out of the narrative. And I was doing that for a long time with certain amounts of success, but nothing crazy. And then in 2017, I had a short that got into Tribeca, and with that same director, that led to an opportunity years later to shoot a feature. And that is what kind of kicked things off, the relationship that I had with the production company that shot that first feature. I've now done three features with them. I'm prepping another short with them that I'm going to do in LA next month. And it kind of brought me into a narrative ecosystem, community, and visibility. And so that's kind of been the long and short of it.
Was there a point in that journey where you realized the work that you were doing was no longer fulfilling?
Oh yeah. Cool. Cause I think in the beginning, my definition of success, whether I was proactively understanding it or not, was evolving. And in the beginning, making money and supporting myself felt like success. And I think that for a while, if I had set up a couple of projects in any given month and I did the math and the money was good, I relaxed and I like took a sigh of relief and I felt like, okay, like I've achieved what I needed to and I could like lay off the gas for a second. And after a while, you know, it could be years, I think, I started being like, well, if I wake up 10, 15, 20 years from now and I'm still doing these types of projects, I'm not gonna be happy. I'm gonna be pretty miserable actually. And that scared me at the time, but it put me into, you know, a more proactive thought process about, well, what does it look like to do to make a move and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you would have been miserable?
Because the challenge would have been gone. I think like at every given moment, if I'm feeling challenged because I haven't figured it out fully, then that's good. But once it gets to a place where this isn't challenging in a good way, it's like, it's all, you know, on my first branded content sets or whatever, you know, it was exciting to be on a set of a certain size and it was exciting to have, you know, budgets of a certain size and that you could work with gear and crew of a certain size. But then afterwards, so that fulfills you for a while, mm-hmm. but then that loses its novelty. And now you're more just assessing, well, what is the work that I'm making? Mm-hmm. And is this all that I want to make? Mm-hmm. And the answer was no.
So what would you say at this point now where you're doing more feature stuff, what does fulfilling work mean to you? Like, what does that entail?
Fulfilling work is definitely not easy work. It's often the hardest work possible. But fulfilling in the sense that, you know, cinematography is a craft, and a craft means that there's just depths to it that you're never going to reach the bottom of. And so the fulfilling work is like the pursuit of being better at the craft and building, you know, your portfolio into this art form that has so much history and dialogue amongst its practitioners that you just want to be, I want to be making work that is a part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I guess I think about it, you know, my perspective comes so much more from just thinking about like what's fulfilling in terms of like my life in context of the work itself.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like it's so, obviously so intertwined, but I'm like, to me, it's so much about enjoying the process, more than actually pushing myself, to solve problems. Mm-hmm. I think there's like a nice marriage there that can be found somewhere, but I find like when I overexert myself on the problems on the shoots and having to always learn new technologies and new ways to do things, like that can sometimes, or most times, like really bleeds over into my personal life to the point where I'm just thinking about work all the time. And so yeah. I'm curious how you manage that, like pushing yourself, you know, and managing like the personal life side of it as well.
I think it's the mental framework in which you are thinking about the job, because I don't view, like not every project, the cool thing about it is that we're doing some sort of new technology thing. In fact, I think that there are DPs out there that love like being on the bleeding edge of the tech or whatever. And I am not like that. And I think that ultimately, like, what I want to do is, am I, you know, figuring out how to maximize the craft to, like, be elevating the story. And I don't know, the more experienced I get, it's like, you know, the more nuanced approach is using less stuff.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to use the least amount of stuff to get the exact thing that you want out of it, because it gets out of the way of itself, and, you know, there's less artifice, ultimately. And so, you know, I think in that regard, I'm trying to approach the craft side of the question in the way that gives me the most joy and is also the most, intellectually intriguing. And that the intellectual side of it doesn't have to be tech. It can be how can we create an environment that gets the most emotion out of the actors? How am I setting up these shots to highlight what the character is going through in this moment? And those things don't need to be, it's acting smarter, not harder kind of thing, but also trying to strip it down, and being, you know, really excited by that, because there's definitely scenarios that if they're trying to push me in ways, or projects that are trying to push me in ways that aren't about that stuff, those are the ones that if I notice it early enough on, I don't take them. Mm-hmm. Or if there's no way out and this is where the situation you find yourself in, I'm definitely not enjoying it as much as I might others.
Right.
And it is what it is. On the life side, you know, I think that I'm still figuring that part out to a degree. I think that'll be an evergreen response, but like trying to deal with the ebbs and flows. Cause I think for me, the biggest thing is that, I was so used to a short form life cycle pattern, in terms of, and like my internal clock would be a part of how I'm waging my success level at any given point in time. And like the turnover, and like, I've just finished something, now I'm moving on to the next thing. And with features and stuff, everything moves slower because like it's a bigger fish when you catch it kind of thing. And I've been having to reassess my internal clock about how I'm considering almost how I should feel about the state of things. And that's like an interesting internal discussion to have.
That's a huge difference too, just in terms of like with short form content, you know, you're getting to release things on a regular basis, but with a feature, it might be over a year or more before you're getting to see it. A lot of times, like, we get a high off of the, you know, the projects that we release on a regular basis. So, and I think even for me, thinking in my 20s, like, a lot of my fulfillment, or the way I would have described fulfilling work, was like purely on the basis of the end product. I mean, maybe not purely, but a lot of it was on the basis of like the success of the end product, and was I happy with it or not? And that sort of expedited this like sense of hurry and urgency over my whole life, you know, to feel like I constantly had to be releasing something. And even like, we would even skip like film festival submissions and stuff sometimes because we just wanted to like put something out to be relevant, you know?
Yeah, it's a big change. And I actually think that I prefer it as I start to get more used to it, because it's less high octane. It's more relaxed. And it's kind of like leaning into patience and kind of moving slowly. But when the moves are made, they're exponentially bigger.
Right.
And so that has been a really, it's a very humbling environment, you know?
Yeah. It's a massive shift, which is interesting. Cause like, I would always think in my mind, like, oh, feature life would be way more chaotic because it's so many days condensed, but
I think it's the opposite. Especially because you get to like live in one world for a long time, which I love. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about just climbing this mountain and going back every day. Because like, you know, you're only starting to get the sense of what the project is after the first week or two. And you can't possibly have that on a 2 or 3 day commercial shoot, but
right.
like how much you understand the world that you're building every day, the visual language that you're setting up, your crew, your specific gear that you might have for run of show. Like there's just such like a deeper sense of everything that comes with like the patience of time that I like really quite enjoy.
Let's dive into like pivoting a little bit, because there's obviously like the transition from commercials to features in your case. It's not like that just happens, you know, on its own without a lot of consideration. I think sometimes like when we don't get the whole scoop and the whole story of what that was like or what that felt like or how long that took and the sacrifices you had to make and everything, it can seem like people are making these huge career strides, like, you know, like it's nothing. But having gone through even myself the last like 4 years, like countless pivots, it is consistently hard work to pivot and get to a place where the work is fulfilling. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the intentional moves that you made to go from commercial work to be doing a lot more narrative and feature work?
I was thinking about how to answer this for a while. And I think that a great way to start is an example of what I think is the start of my narrative career in earnest was that short film that got into Tribeca. Mm-hmm. And at the time that I got the call from the director about the project, I had a big budget branded content campaign shooting for Delta Airlines. And I had already done the tech scout and we were gonna shoot in like 2 weeks. And it was directly on the dates that I would start traveling to Vietnam to prep for the short film. And I had long conversations with my now wife, but then girlfriend about it. And it just kept coming back to like, well, what actually matters and where are you trying to go, and you know, what are you really sacrificing if you don't take this job? And obviously I ultimately decided to do it, but interestingly, so it was, they made it really difficult on me emotionally. I called the director, I told him, and he understood immediately. And he had another DP that I offered people, but he had another DP that he had in mind if I wasn't going to do it. But then I gave that DP all of my lighting plan notes, everything that I was planning on doing. Like I didn't care. I don't even know if he ended up using it, but it was more like, I'll give you everything. I'm going to do everything that I can to make this transition as easy as possible. And then we tell the agency, and I got what I think was a drunken email from one of the agency producers at like 2 a.m, chewing me out. Mm. How could I? How could you? And like, I'm not contractually obligated, so like, it didn't. But he went off, and I tried to respond as like safely and politically as I can, being like, I totally understand, and I'm sorry, but like, I've set you up for success, but like, I have this opportunity, and I have to take it. And obviously I then go do that. And funny enough, like a year later, I got an opportunity to shoot a commercial for the same production agency and the same producer. And he forgot, completely forgot. Wow. I was like on set with him and I was like, listen, man, I'm so glad that like, you know, we're able to work together again after the Delta thing. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, dude, are you kidding? Like, I can't believe that. And I think that just really highlighted his lack of remembering it, and then also rehiring me was just like, it couldn't have made that decision more clear mm-hmm. in hindsight. Mm-hmm. And I think that the pivot stuff, it's hard to define it because it doesn't happen quickly. And it's a bit obtuse because I think it's a lot of little things that eventually have maybe a breakpoint moment. But I think the way that I go about it is that I really start thinking about that change. I start telling people I want to do that change. And then in small ways, you start prioritizing that change, whether it be, you know, I obviously was going to make more on this Delta thing than this, you know, 4 week odyssey in Vietnam that was paying me almost nothing. But, you know, it made sense, and trying to be as financially savvy as possible, that I definitely still have, you know, corporate clients that let me take on narrative jobs and not have to worry about the cash of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from the time that I wanted to earnestly be in that space to shooting my first feature that was like a real feature, like still indie, but $2 million feature, was about 4 years.
Wow. You mentioned a little bit about like the financial part of it. Can you go in a little more depth about like what that was like for you and maybe some of like the sacrifices you had to make? Because I'm asking because that seems to be something from my experience that a lot of people, including myself, struggle a lot with is like, you know, do you work double doing what you've been doing while creating the more fulfilling work, either for like low to no money, or do you, and which comes with like a big life sacrifice because like you're all of a sudden working all the time, or do you like, you know, just focus primarily on the passion work and take a huge financial cut? I think that's one of the hardest things to navigate. So I'm curious, like how you manage to do that.
Well, I think that telling people that you are now Y after being X for so long, you don't need to stop doing X projects. You just need to stop advertising that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Until you don't need to do them anymore. And so I was still taking a lot of that type of work. Cause you know, all of these projects are a week, 2 weeks of time, especially hard time. That might be more soft prep or something, but like in terms of days where you're truly not available for anything else. So I always felt like it was kind of manageable to just pick and choose when I needed to take something that is a creative thing. Like obviously if two things are happening on the same date, that's a very apples for apples decision.
Right.
But hopefully I had made, you know, enough money previously and I've been pretty good about money for a long time. Mm-hmm. And have it saved up. I certainly don't, you know, it's not like whatever comes in goes out. It's kind of whatever comes in and the least amount goes out that has to. Mm-hmm. It's been that way for a long time, which has I think been helpful. But yeah, trying to have to this day certain clients and other things that are kind of like a fiscal engine that is not my creative engine. Mm-hmm. But one powers the other, and hopefully, you know, I think Nirvana is when the fiscal and creative engine are the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that could take a really long time. I think that could take, you know, 20 years. That could be, mm-hmm. you know, in your mid to later stage of career.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have a really good sense of clarity on like the types of jobs that are just jobs and like money jobs and not necessarily fulfilling work and the type of work that is fulfilling? Or do you find yourself tying those in knots from time to time at this point?
It's the delineation is easier now. Yeah. The ones that don't do that aren't that are pure money jobs, it's I always want to strive to make them look as good as I can. But if I present why this is a problem and we need to do it this way, and if production tells me, well, no, it needs to be this way, tough, I'll just be like, okay, like I told you, you don't want to hear it, but it's like, okay. And more working within the confines that are presented, whereas in something that I really care about, I think that I might be more emotionally invested in the frustrations that might occur.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And push to, you know, and ride a bit a thinner line about am I pushing too hard or not. But always trying to do a good job. You know, it's not about phoning it in, because the money jobs still matter quite a bit, because I, you know, they represent my ability to do the creative ones that aren't going to pay as well still.
Yeah, one topic I want to like open up to when we open up the conversation is just about like what are the reasons that we get stuck, and you know, how do we get ourselves out of that?
It's crazy. I feel like there have, like, notably, probably, I don't know, around five specific times since the start of things where I felt like my, like, and it's so dramatic to say, and it's also not true clearly, but like, oh, my career is over or something. And I think it's because you mentally, you look at what has been feeding you recently, and it's, and if that stuff's drying up with no prospects in sight, you're like, yeah, well, that's it. I ran out of gas before, like, getting into orbit, so to speak. And I think a couple of things about that. Like, one, I think we are all more or less probably incorrect when thinking that we've actually hit a dead end. I'd think that we probably all treat ourselves worse than we should mentally, and it's probably just not true. Then the second thing is that I've always used those periods that have always ended up being really big growth periods in the end, because there's been a lot of self-assessment. Mm-hmm. And like, well, what about now do I not like, and what would I rather have? And you know, something that I forgot to mention is that because of the way I came up as a documentarian, it was pretty much a director DP hyphenate because I was just making my own docs. And that stuck for, that hyphenate thing stuck for a while, longer than it should have even. And when I started to reach what I thought was some sort of dead end, I think I like really took time assessing that whole thing and decided to choose a career as a DP and a DP only. And at the time, it was because I feel like I chose happiness for myself, because I just liked that more. And the worst day doing that was still a day I enjoyed, whereas directing, it wasn't for me. And so I think that in these moments, it's been like super introspective, really trying to listen to that voice in your head in a way that, I don't know, I think that there's always a voice in our head, and we kind of hear it like a silent siren, and we don't pay attention to it for the longest time. And then all of a sudden, like, a tipping point happens, and all of a sudden you recognize that you've been telling yourself whatever it may be, that you don't like this thing, or that you should really be doing this. And it's kind of just interesting the moments in which that we finally start listening to it. And I think that happens on the macro level that we're talking about, like career, but also on the micro level. It's something that I try and talk to with people on my sets, is that there's something really interesting where, if you're like, we're all looking at the monitor getting ready for a shot, and how much you can hear in your head that something about the frame isn't right, but you don't say it out loud, and like that we all have to work harder at saying it out, like saying it, actually like recognizing that and saying it out loud. And that happens on a shot by shot basis in a film, and I think that it's the same skill that we need to apply on longer time scales about ourselves.
Yeah. So you're talking about like the phrase that I'm familiar with is like inner voice.
Totally.
Mission.
Yeah. And like you hear it, but I think there's a difference, and you hear it constantly. You know, I'm in a constant stream of thought, stream of consciousness with my head. Mm-hmm. But somehow, even though that we all do that, I think it's harder to actually recognize what it's saying in a way that sparks a change or a different approach or a critical thinking.
Right.
And I think that in hindsight, these moments of stagnation, or feeling like we've hit a dead end, or feeling like, I don't know how our career is going to go on or something, that causes a level of introspection that like you assess that inner dialogue differently in a positive way, or at least that's the goal.
What I'm curious about is like, do we have to hit a dead end before we pivot? You know, do we have to?
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I think that's something like I'm trying to cultivate more of, just like a fluidity approach to life and career and work. And it does, because I mean, a lot of people on here know my story about like hitting my own dead end after the production company. And that was a really, really hard lesson that required a lot of introspection, but it was like, yeah, so much damage had been done at that point. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the way like a lot of us have to learn.
Totally. I think that it's only more notable when it happens in that moment of distress.
Yeah.
But I think that as we get older and our experience gains, I think that we are listening in less turbulent times and making adjustments without the need for it to be so dramatic. But I think those are just less notable. But I do think that I'm getting better at it in a more less volatile type of ups and downs way.
Yeah, well, you mentioned something earlier about just like talking to friends and colleagues and things about like kind of like fleshing out ideas, like whether you got the idea that you wanted to do features or just like sharing these ideas with people. That the way I look at it, it's like legitimizing your inner voice, you know, like to a therapist, to my wife, to a friend. Like earlier today, I was talking to someone. I was like, oh yeah, I think I might want to move out to LA. And these are things that like come up to me in these like moments of silence or meditation or whatever. And I'll like brood on it a lot, but then it reaches a point where I have to talk to other people about it and like get there and like I'll suss it out for a period of time, sometimes like months. And then it reaches a point where it's like, okay, this is real. You know, I have to do this.
I've always been the type to tell people things when I'm thinking about them early, early, early on. And I know that there are some people that like, oh, like I make my moves quietly, or like I don't say something until it's totally done. And I, you know, to each their own, but for me, that's just not something that I relate to, jive with, or find the most benefit from. Cause I just think that I'm very much a talker and like an expressor of ideas. And even in like a leadership role, like DP, like I'll say things out loud to my crew, and I want to create environments where everyone feels comfortable telling me an idea. Mm-hmm. Not because I need to use it, but because I learned so much by my gut reaction to hearing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm doing that on a life level when I just like say things that I'm thinking very mm-hmm. early. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what sort of interesting things people might say.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, great advice, or they say something that makes you rethink what you're thinking about, or they're like, yeah, I know someone who could offer you XYZ, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that like keeping these intentions bottled up is only cutting short possibilities.
Mm. I'm going to tweet that last quote. Good one.
It's true though. I don't know. Like you just tell people, I just tell, like, I guess what the fear might be of it not being true or something, but like, I don't know. You're allowed, like everything is fluid and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your intentions and stuff. And yeah. Cause what's weird is that I think in a more macro way, I have friends from like high school and stuff. They're like, oh, like you're lucky. You always know what you wanted to do. And I was like, but I'm not doing anywhere near what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like if anything, whenever I have an idea of what I think is the moment, like I'm like fully into it until I pivot.
Yeah.
And then I'm fully into that. And I think it's like, it's strong opinions, loosely held, strong convictions, loosely held,
mm-hmm.
until I'm given a reason to change my mind. I won't, and I'll, but if I am given a reason to change my mind, like I really will.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the big things that will influence you to change your mind at this point in your life?
Gosh, I don't know how to, I mean, sound reason and logic. I don't know. Right. I think that's kind of where I try and, certain decisions, it's good for there to be an emotional element, and others it's better if there's not. And it's hard to say in a hypothetical, but
yeah,
trying to figure out in any given moment what is the right elixir for a decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much reason, how much logic, how much emotion.
Yeah, I think what I'm referring to in that question in your case is like, you know, you have a baby now, you're married now. And that's what I'm curious to open this conversation up, is like everyone's situations and circumstances are so much different from the other person's. Yeah. Some of us are single, some of us have kids, some of us are married, whatever the situation, some of us care for our parents and things like that. And it's always interesting to me what sort of anchors dictate the ways in which we can go about pivoting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down so much to the individual. It's like I'm only able to do certain things because of the scenarios that I've set up, either with the understandings of my wife or the understandings of my parents who live nearby to help babysit. Recently I just finished my most recent feature, and it happened really last minute, and I was in LA for a different project, and then that got greenlit and I ended up staying. And so I went out for, you know, one project and ended up staying for much longer for the other one. And, you know, it's like long conversations with my wife about how we're gonna make that work, and her support is what allows it to happen.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that we didn't get to as much in this conversation is, yeah, those the things in our lives that help enable us to pivot in the directions that we want to go in.
Well, it's like that's also a part of it. It's like I don't think that the decision making on the pivot can happen in a vacuum. Right. It has to include all of these things. And I mean, we actively talk all the time, my wife and I, about how are we going to continue finding like career success while doing this family, while having the family aspect. And we are like in constant proactive conversation about it. Mm-hmm. We don't let it like linger on the side and like, you know, let it go unattended and just let it drift.
Right.
You're constantly talking about it and gaining insight from either friends or mentors that are in the same position. And you know, like she has a mentor who does huge movies and is married to a big cinematographer, and they have two teenage kids, and seeing that as an example is super helpful. And it's like just really trying to glean as much as we can.
Yeah, that's awesome. You've mentioned that before to me. I think that's a gift for sure. So I think lacking any sense. What's that?
Just to let you know it's possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I know starting out, like I didn't have the healthiest mentors. And so I always thought things had to be done a certain way in the industry. And lo and behold, there's more than one way to be in the film industry.
Yeah, and it's weird. I've never had like one mentor, really. I haven't had many. I think it's like you try and pick and choose from all of the different examples you're seeing around you, and creating the amalgamation that results in like the way you want to do things.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much answers all my questions. I mean,
cool.
Anything else you want to say, Jared, or do you want to open it up for conversation or questions?
I've definitely said this on some other of like the variable talks and stuff, but it was something that I think comes up specifically for this conversation, is that I think so many people are the thing that they want to be doing in the industry, they're not doing yet. And they're like, it just remains this thing that they will get to. And because of how long things take and how small the steps are, there's no point in not trying to start that stuff like now, because that it doesn't, it's not like a full 100%, you're not doing the way things were anymore, you're now doing this. Like, I think the only way to be working in a certain aspect of the industry is to be working in that aspect of the industry. I don't think rising too much in one level changes anything about this other level, this other place where you're at no level on. Mm-hmm. So I think doing the thing that you want to be doing is how you do it. So anyway, questions?
I'm curious what, for anyone else, like what are the biggest struggles or maybe current struggles you face when it comes to pivoting towards more fulfilling work?
Okay, I'm going to cut things off of there. If you're interested in hearing the dialogue that went on after the conversation between Jared and I, there's about an hour and 15 minutes. I think there was about 13 or so of us in the conversation, and we just sort of went around and discussed the different things that are currently holding us back from pursuing the type of work that we would like to be doing. So it was a great session. I think I mentioned in the intro, it sort of felt like a group therapy session of sorts, which was very healing for me, at least. So yeah, feel free to join in at wearevariable.com. And again, thank you, Jared. If you're interested in checking out Jared's work, his website is jaredlevy.nyc. And I guess we'll catch up in the community or on the next podcast. All right. Have a great day.